even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Coming to you from Rubber Track Studio, doing my best DJ voice, it is Steven here at Going Off Track with Jonah Bear and Brad Worrell, a.k.a. Brad Goop.
Happy to be here,
yeah.
Steven. Do you think we can keep this up for the full intro?
We're going to do it. I can do it all day.
I think we really need to get really close to the mic and get that super DJ voice out.
Okay. We have to do like midnight DJs.
Okay.
Did you ever see that movie Pirate Radio?
Oh, yeah.
The Midnight Mark. He's this DJ, and he's like the sexy nighttime DJ. And he never speaks, and he'll just go, yeah. And then play a song, and he doesn't talk the entire movie. It's really, really funny. I can, like, all those voices, like broadcaster voices, I can't watch local news. I can only watch like Brian Williams. Like, he's the only newscaster I can stomach because he talks with gravitas. He talks like a person and gets the news out. But if you watch any local newscast, it's up next at 11. It's like hosting 101. Don't talk like that.
No, totally.
People don't talk that way.
Well, you know,
it's really irritating.
I haven't watched the news like really consistently in probably 10 or 15 years, because I felt like once I moved out of my parents' house, didn't have TV or never watched it. And I saw it recently. I was in California, and every newscaster looks like a stripper now.
Yeah,
it's so weird. I was like, because I felt like when I was growing up, they looked like my teachers and regular people. Mm-hmm. And now you turn around and I'm like, this is so crazy. Like, when did that happen?
I think it's Fox News's fault. Because
really?
They started casting nothing but like
strippers.
You know, hot blonde and strippers. You know, yeah. Well, they go to the well. They know they know what they want. They know how they want to do it.
They know who their audience is.
It's like reverse stewardesses.
Yeah. Reverse flight attendants.
Yes. My favorite band.
Reverse stewardesses? Oh, yeah. They're sick.
That is pretty good.
Yeah, that first EP, No, You Can't Sit There, Sir. Great, great album. I never understood why they're talking. So when I first started hosting, my buddy Amir Halim, who was a host at VH1, he now does a morning show in Vancouver, he would talk like that. He would do the, and here's U2 with their new single. And I remember being off camera yelling, why are you doing that? He's like, what do you mean? Why? You don't talk that way to me, dude. And he probably remembers this completely differently. He's like, he's this dumb punk, like yelling at me. But he taught me everything about hosting. But I remember we would have this conversation of why do you put pauses in phrases that don't exist? Like, it's almost like pandering. And I think it's people who've never done broadcasting before think that's how you're supposed to talk because you've seen other people do it. Like, Walter Cronkite never did that show.
Yeah, I'm still convinced that we're going to get, I mean, I hope we are, we're going to get a politician who's going to step up and talk to people like a human being, and hopefully the content will also be the same, because it's just stunning how you can take the most real, your favorite politician of all time, and they have to talk that way of talking.
It's that weird form of, that's why Reagan was so good at it, because he was an actor.
Right.
So he could act and convey,
yeah.
You know, and Obama's amazing at it. I mean, he's really phenomenal, but then when you can tell he pauses, he puts in weird pauses.
Yeah, yeah.
If you watch him, he'll be like, and the people, that's my Obama. That's really all I have. That's
Fred Armisen, look out.
Yeah, man. Okay, here's the thing with Obama and Fred Armisen. Like, I can't wait to talk to Fred about this because I wonder if that's weird because Jay Farrow, like, he's like an impressionist. That's his jam. So he comes on the show. You know, Jay Farrow's a black guy. He can do Obama, like, perfectly, you know? I don't know. I wonder how that hierarchy is at SNL.
I don't know.
If that came up at all. Because I know they always had that. They had that weird, I felt bad for when, you know, Will Ferrell left and they had to have someone else do George Bush.
Right, right.
That's just, great. Thanks.
Well, I know what you mean because it seems like sometimes that it was miscast. They would have, it seemed like oftentimes they, even when they were doing a new, you know, they'd come up with a new character that they didn't always pick the best person to do it, it seems like.
Hmm. We'll have to have Vanessa back on and discuss the inner workings.
Yes.
Do you remember in the like, we've all seen the footage of Dan Aykroyd doing Jimmy Carter? Yeah. He's got a mustache. They didn't care. That's what I love about the early stuff. He had a mustache, and then it's like Chevy Chase doing Gerald Ford. He looks like Chevy Chase. Perfect. Perfect. Now, watch this. I'm going to do what I used to do on television, which do a really bizarre segue and see if I can make it make sense.
Okay.
Chevy Chase, of course, there's Chevy Chase, Maryland, which is a state, you know, below Delaware, which is below Pennsylvania, which is where Dave Haas, today's guest, lives. Look at that.
Wow. That I didn't do yoga today, but I feel like I still had a stretch.
Whoa! Nice work. Man, I still wanted to use that joke on you after your yoga retreat. Was it a stretch? Dave Haas from The Loved Ones, singer-songwriter. He's put out a series of EPs on 5 different labels this July. Five 7-inches, not EPs. Well, I guess you can call a 7-inch an EP, right? How many songs are on a 7-inch?
It depends. For United Nations, we can put on like 12.
Yeah, that's
but
true.
Some bands can just do 2 songs.
All right, so he's putting out a 7-inch series, 5 different labels. July, Chunksaw, great Chunksaw label, is putting out Dave Haas' 7-inch. So go out and grab it. Grab all of them. Actually, get everything Dave Haas has written and done. He's a great songwriter, got a great voice. I dig listening to Dave. We're going to talk about him and The Loved Ones, what he's doing right now. Talk about, of course, about Chuck Reagan, because I think all roads lead to Chuck Reagan on
they
this
do.
Podcast.
They do.
And some fun stuff. So here's Mr. Dave Haas, our buddy from Pennsylvania.
It's going on track!
And our guest this week, Dave Haas of The Loved Ones and solo artist extraordinaire. Thank you very much.
Hey, thanks for having me, man. It's nice to be here in this cool gray room.
It's very nice.
And a gray indicates that it's dingy, but it's not. It's very clean.
No, and it doesn't reek of smoke like other studios and things.
No, it's really nice in here.
We have been discussing bringing in like a pony keg or beer or something. We just tend to start these rather early, so it feels awkward. Come on in, Corey.
Hey, look, it's Corey Brennan.
Corey Brennan has walked in with coffee for Dave.
Oh, thanks, buddy.
And you guys are on tour together?
That's right. We are. This is day 3, I guess, for me. Corey tore it up from... Oh, you're all right. What's this?
Half a bagel. Only half.
Corey Brennan just threw something in foil at you, and it looked very dubious for a second.
Yeah, it's just a bagel.
Now he's handing him a spoon and a lighter. I don't know where this is going. It's getting very awkward. Corey, thanks for joining us.
Cheers.
Right on.
Very witty this early.
It's all right. Corey, where are you from?
Memphis. I'm from Mississippi, but there were no hospitals there, so they drove up, had me, drove back home. Yeah, I grew up just south of Memphis, you know, Mississippi, Tennessee, Arkansas, right there, northernmost part of Mississippi.
Very cool. And Dave, you're from Philly, yes?
Correct, yeah, right, born and raised.
What part?
I was raised in Roxborough, but I moved out into the burbs about 8 years ago.
Which burb?
Ambler.
It's Ambler.
A little town northwest of the city.
That's so weird. I was just there for Thanksgiving.
You're
my
kidding.
My aunt and uncle live there.
You're kidding.
No, I swear.
Next time you go, you should give me a holler and we'll go do something fun. Yeah. I mean, not that going to your aunt's isn't fun.
No, totally. That's the last place I would expect. It's very super suburban.
It's, well...
Well, at least where they are.
Well, here's the thing about it. Like, most of the suburban areas outside Philly are, like, total wasteland, cul-de-sacs, and just the only thing to do is to go to Target. Like, I mean, it's a drag, but Ambler's an actual town. It has, like, an art movie theater, a bunch of bars, a bunch of coffee shops. So it was my like I resisted going to the burbs, but it was an okay compromise with my wife. You know, I was like, all right, well, this is a cool burb because it's a town. You can get something to eat and get a bar.
Looked like a little small southern town when I drove in there.
Yeah.
Got the old theater.
Yeah. And it's 30 minutes into the city, so you can hop on a train. Perfect. I never have to bother anybody for a ride when I'm, you know, flying somewhere.
We did the same thing. We moved to Princeton Junction, New Jersey.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, which is also, exactly, it's a town.
Right.
There's stuff there.
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
But there's a Target very close, and I go to it often.
Are you filled with glee when it's time to go to Target because it's something to do? That's when you know you're living in a terrible place.
No, he's filled with pee because he's going to get big things of diapers, I would assume.
So many diapers. My entire world.
How old is your kid?
I have two. They're 8 months.
Two you'd have?
Twin now. Girls, yeah.
Congratulations.
Wow.
Eight months.
No. Did I play that wrong?
No. One, have them one at a time, right, Brad?
It's hard enough that way.
Yeah, one at a time is the way to go. No, I had the experience yesterday. I was holding one of the girls, and I was like, "Somebody pooped," and I'm like, "No, wait a minute, this is a smell on me from a defecation from earlier from one of you."
This is
awful. But I get the whole move to like a burb that you can survive in. You know what I mean? It's essential, and we're about 45 from Philly.
I guess you are right. You're like halfway between.
Yeah,
you kind of get the best. That's a good spot, actually, where you are.
It's way closer than Manhattan, which I'm fine with because I dig Philly. Because my wife's from Feasterville.
Right.
Hear about that. Now, you and Corey, you played last night?
Yeah, we did. We played in Brooklyn.
Right on. And so how long has this been, an ongoing tour or a recent thing or just a couple of dates?
We did Philly on Tuesday, New Haven on Wednesday, Brooklyn last night, and then we go all the way up to the 23rd of December. And we end in Memphis, right?
Yeah, last one's in Memphis.
Where you were born, because they didn't have hospitals in Mississippi.
There you go.
Well done.
Full circle.
Aw, it's a good ending. Now, is it full-on bands playing? Is it just you solo? Is it?
Two of the shows, I have a band.
Okay.
So one of them was Philly. That already happened. And then Manhattan on Sunday at Mercury Lounge is a full band show. And then the rest of them are solo. I've been trying to just be practical about when I have a band, when it's close to home, when I can have my buddies play and... Mm-hmm. Not hire a band and basically watch any money I ever make evaporate. Because if you hire a professional band, it's crazy expensive. So I've been just trying to be smart about the way I tour and, you know. And also, I think it's cool to keep people on their toes. I mean, if you have a band and people are not expecting it, it can be like a welcome surprise. Mm. And then if you show up just sometimes with a guitar, I mean, keep people on their toes. Sometimes I have people come up and guest and... do stuff like that, so just try to keep it fresh.
Do you find it hard to differentiate between Dave Haas and the loved ones? Do you still throw in loved ones tracks when you play live?
I do. I'm finding it less and less hard to differentiate just because I've been doing the solo thing almost entirely for the last, well, for all of this year and then some of last year. So I'm starting to get actually used to playing solo. You know, and starting to forget what it's like to be turned way up loud and racing around the stage at top speeds and all that stuff. It's nice to kind of have a new thing to put your energy into and learn how to do, which has been this like whole year of solo touring is relearning how to play music in a different way.
I saw you play an acoustic show. It probably, we'll let you fill in the blanks, but I'm going to label it as the hardest spot on a lineup to play, because you played at the South by Southwest Fat Record Showcase following Ben Weasel punching woman in the face.
Well, I should have timed how long it would take for you to bring this up. I figured it would be a topic we'd talk about.
Well, that was the last time I saw you play.
Yeah. So that was the hardest spot. It was something I should never have agreed to do. But your friend and mine, Vanessa, has the power of persuasion. She's a fantastic human being and was like, hey, will you play the Fat Records Showcase? And I said, well, I'm not on Fat Records. I'd put this record out elsewhere. And she was like, well, yeah, but you're part of the family. We're going to have you and Joey Cape play after Screeching Weasel. And I was like, oh, that's a terrible idea. Two acoustic guys who aren't playing with their bands. Which, you know, the Fat Records, some of their fans are going to already balk at that. And we're going to go on after Screeching Weasel. that sounds terrible. So earlier in the day, I played a show with another bizarre idea. It was Painted Black and Fake Problems, Title Fight, Bane.
That was a Shirts for a Cure.
Shirts for a Cure right. show. But, I mean, I was the only acoustic act amongst, you know, Bane and Painted Black. Like, mm-hmm. I was playing essentially a hardcore show. There was a couple other bands, like Riverboat Gamblers played yep. and so did Fake Problems. But that was at about 1 in the afternoon. And knowing what I had to do later in the night, I think I was supposed to go on at 11 o'clock in, you know, after Screeching mm-hmm. Weasel later that night, I proceeded to drink all day long. I mean, just drink and drink and drink, just knowing that I had to do it. I tried to pace myself, but it didn't work that well. It was too long of a period of time. And I got to the show and Screeching Weasel was having, a great show. It seemed to. I mean, I wasn't quite paying attention. I never was really a fan, thankfully, of that band.
Yeah.
So this night didn't break my heart in any way. And I'm just lamenting my choice to do the show. I'm like, oh, my God, why did I agree to play? I mean, these people are going to either leave, which I hope at this point, or they'll stay and rip me apart, you know? So I'm like, fuck. Oh, can I say fuck?
You can say whatever, yeah.
I can say
it's a podcast.
Shit. Yeah, no,
just, not shit. Fuck is very okay. appropriate. Shit,
so I'm
no.
like, oh, fuck,
show.
This is terrible. I don't know how this is going to go down. And I was standing there actually talking to Dan Yeaman from Painted mm-hmm. Black. He's an old friend of mine. And I'm like, man, I should have not agreed to this. This was terrible. This is a terrible idea. And he was like, look, man, just do it. If you can't chicken out, you can't bail. Just see it through. And lo and behold, I look up and there's some melee going down. And it turns out Ben Weasel, that guy aptly named, punched a woman in the front row and then punched the promoter. And people were like, you know, part of me was kind of just, you know, shocked for sure. And then also, I thought it was distasteful. It was an awful thing that he did. But the selfish side of me was like, awesome. Oh, this is so great. He just wrecked his own show. And so anything I do other than hurting people who came to the show will be fine. It's going to be great. he just saved my night. So the whole thing caves in. The place goes crazy. People want to kill this guy. And the only way out of the backstage where he retired to with his wife and manager, in the backstage you couldn't get out of without going through the crowd. And people wanted to hurt him. I mean, mm-hmm. they were furious. Of course, my acoustic guitar was back there, and so this big security guard was standing there, and, you know, I said, I got to get back there. I got to get my guitar, and he goes, nobody's allowed back there, and I said, listen, man, you're a big guy. I was like, and things are crazy right now. I was like, I'm getting back there no matter what. That's my guitar. It's the way I make money. I need it. I certainly want nothing to do with that cretin that just punched those women. So I go back there and I'm fishing around for it, moving stuff around, and he's sitting there, this Ben Weasel character, and he goes, well, the hell with that. I'm just going to put it out there in the public. I mean, this is going to be public. He goes, hey, who are you? I was like, my name's Dave, and I don't want to be in this conversation at all. Like, I don't want to, like, I'm just here for my guitar. And he goes, I got some advice for you. Like, he's a total, like, he's just an arrogant guy, like you're in his presence. Like, I don't know him, but just within that first couple seconds, I was like, this is not a guy I'd want to be hanging out with ever. Hey, I got some advice for you. And I was like, what could you possibly have to give me for advice? What advice are you, like, I don't want any of your advice. He goes, oh yeah, well, when you go up there and play, don't punch anybody. And I just looked at him, I looked at his wife, and I was like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, this is funny to you? This is so I was like, yeah. Oh, hey, duly noted. I'm out of here. You know, grab my guitar and then played and proceeded to. I had plenty to say about the event, if I'm not mistaken, about him. He was bagging on Mike, who owns Fat Records, yeah. and bagging on Vanessa and the whole staff.
And then he's bagging on South by Southwest. And it was,
which, yeah, I mean, it's a sham, the whole thing. I mean, they do get you down there. I'm not really sure what the point of South by Southwest is. It's a little bit, it's not that artist friendly. They don't really pay mm-hmm. well, but you go into it knowing, you know, he was eyes wide open about the whole situation. So to go there and bitch seems so juvenile. I mean, like, he knew what he was getting into. I don't know what.
And the rants were longer than the songs. That's what bothered me most. And I'm not a Screeching Weasel fan. I was with Mike Wiebe from Riverboat Gamblers drinking heavily.
Yeah.
And not listening to the set. And I remember he and I both went, wow, he just hit somebody. Anyway. Oh, he just hit a chick. That's fucked up. All right. And then we just kind of sat back and just watched the carnage go.
Yeah.
And the best thing about the entire evening was afterwards watching all the bands on tour with Screeching Weasel just have this big powwow in the parking lot and go, we're out. Fuck this.
Yeah, yeah.
We're not doing the tour.
Yeah, he's a pretty grotesque person from what I gather. I don't – my dealings with him were just that brief, and right. he seemed pretty he seemed to not have any remorse for what he did. I don't know. I mean, I don't really follow it. I'm sure if this gets out into the world, he'll take a few snipes. Doesn't he, like, go on the internet a lot
and
start trouble with bands or whatever? But
whatever. The best comment of the night was it was either Jonah or Trevor who texted me and said, boy, I bet Mike from All American Rejects really regretting that Screeching Weasel tattoo right about now.
Dude, Mike, like, produced his records and stuff. So I don't know what the...
Yeah, moronic.
Well, the best quote I got was I was in contact with Fat Mike. He wanted to, I mean, every year with South by Southwest, he does something that, you know, bizarre.
Yeah.
And he had done Cokie the Clown the year before. And he texted me while I was there and said, hey, pretend that I'm at, like, basically, I'm not at South by Southwest, but I'm via Twitter, I'm attempting to make people think I'm there, which was kind of a half baked idea, frankly. Mm-hmm. But I was like, all right, I'll play along on Twitter, no problem. And had tweeted, you know, oh, Mike and I just got wasted with Bane or whatever, you know, like silly things like that. And so people were saying, hey, where's Mike? So I texted him. As soon as that happened, I was like, hey, your buddy just punched two women at the Fat Wreck showcase. Wondering what he was going to text back. You know, I was like, I wonder how he's going to handle this. And his text back was simply, fucking Christians. With a bunch of exclamation points. Oh, I thought it was great. So, yeah, that was his response. But yeah, it was a bizarre scene. And the next day, actually, Vanessa called and was like, "Hey, Fox News wants a quote from someone who was there and involved. And you know, do you want to do it?" And I was like, you know, kind of, because it would be. It's always fun to get on TV. You can,
and plus, you might be the actual quote on Fox News that. From someone who was actually there and involved. You could be the first.
The problem, though, was it was Fox News, so whatever I was going to say, they'd find the most sinister or the cruddiest thing I could say about him, and that would be the soundbite. And honestly, I just don't want really anything to do with that event. I don't really want to be attached to it or have any kind of association, really.
Well, I will say, following the incident, I watched your set and enjoyed it immensely.
Oh,
and there was a crowd for it.
Yeah, it was cool.
It was a really good set.
It was fun. I mean, the night worked out perfectly for me. And that said, I feel awful for the two people who got punched. I mean, that's a drag. But there's a silver lining, I guess, to everything.
You wanted it so badly to go away. And then it just flipped on itself. It was a really good set.
It made it a lot easier. And I thought to myself as it was going down, well, either this is going to get canceled because the cops are going to show up and we're going to have a big mess. Or I can just go up there and be mellow and make jokes about how much of a jerk he had been. And it worked out just fine. In fact, his manager, who ended up quitting, later called me to, I guess he also now manages Tommy Stinson.
Okay.
And so it's like, hey, man, you know, you want to do these Tommy Stinson? So I got to know this manager guy, Ben, that's terrific, who was actually working for Screeching Weasel at the time and subsequently quit. But so, you know, some good things came out of it.
And I was reading that you did some dates with Tommy Stinson,
which
you pointed out, I was reading on your site that, you know, Tommy Stinson played in Guns N' Roses and all caps Soul Asylum, the new bass player, which
yes.
I think is awesome.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, he's been playing with Soul Asylum for quite a while.
Since the other guy died a few years ago.
Yeah,
I knew that.
I'm a big Soul Asylum fan.
Me too.
And, yeah,
and like I started with Hang Time. Remember being in high school and like watching 120 minutes, like, who is this?
Yeah.
This band's amazing. And just loving it. And then, you know, of course, The Replacements, obviously.
Yeah.
Where we were just, I mean, not a whole lot you can say that's bad because they rule.
No, I just did this thing at Jesse Mallon's club a couple weeks ago. He showed that new movie, Color Me Obsessed.
Oh yeah,
it's a fan made movie. Mm-hmm. I guess the director's like, I mean, it's really well done, but that was the way it was sold to me. It was like, oh, it's a fan made movie, but it seemed totally well put together. At any rate, he showed that movie, and then he had a band learn about 30 replacement songs. And so Craig from the Hold Steady and Patrick from Titus Andronicus and myself and Jesse Mallon and a bunch of other singers and songwriters and different people. I think Ted Leo did one the next night, and Nicole Atkins and all these different people sang replacement songs.
Right on. Which one did you do?
I did two of them. I did IOU and Anywhere is Better Than Here.
Right on.
And then at the end, we all did Bastards of Young. And I think we may have all done one other one. But yeah, it was cool. And it was kind of cool, like, now that, you know, knowing Tommy, like, to watch that movie with that. Because, you know, hanging out with him for those 3 days, I tried to get as much, you know, replacements stuff as possible. It was cool, though. He kind of talks about Paul Westerberg the same way you or I would. Like, he's like, yeah, I don't know. He kind of lives down by the river, and you don't see him much. And, like, you know.
But was there, like, any animosity, though?
It didn't seem like there was any at that point. In fact, we played Minneapolis, and Paul was supposed to come out.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like, they had been talking about.
Because supposedly the only reason there's nothing that they won't do a show is because the two of them don't want to play together. Maybe it's on Paul. I don't know.
It didn't seem that way to me. I mean, Tommy seemed. I mean, he was so gracious and really, you know, awesome to me. He and his wife are terrific people. And but I don't know if there is anything there. I don't know. But, you know, I kind of don't want to see a replacements reunion.
Yeah.
I might be in the minority.
I don't
but
know.
I'd
rather see it now than in 10 years.
Well, I think the thing about it for me is it's just so cool.
Yeah.
If you weren't there, you didn't get it, and that's it. Every other band is reunited. And
yeah.
I mean, if you can give me five that are amazing, then great. But I can't think of five where it's like, wow, the magic's back. I mean, the replacements were just, they were what they were, and I think it's cool that you don't get any more.
No, there's a lot to be said for that.
Yeah,
for
sure. I mean, he just makes those crazy songs in his basement, and there's moments of sheer genius,
right.
And then, you know, long-running portions of tape where he's just throwing shit at a wall. You know, it's cool. I mean, he's like one of my heroes.
Oh, yeah.
So to go back down memory lane and play Coachella, it just seems.
Well, that would suck, I guess. I think the only reason I thought it would be cool is because they could actually do it and be decent as opposed to a lot of the bands that get together.
Did you ever see
make a buck. The Replacements?
Yeah.
Oh, dude, I saw the Replacements. I went to see the Replacements in, like, it was I Will Dare was the single.
Nice.
So whatever fucking year that was. Thinking that it was the Reducers, which was a band from Connecticut, this punk band from Connecticut. And it was like, we just didn't know what the fuck. I didn't know the Replacements, didn't know anything about them. And it was one of those halfway in between shows. They were fucking lubed, but like they played a great show. And I remember they did a cover of Taking a Ride.
Oh,
and it was
yeah.
just like, fuck. And they did I Will Dare. I knew I Will Dare from the radio, but and that was it, dude. They're like one of my favorite bands of all time.
Yeah, me too.
That was the show.
I mean, I think it would be cool if at a Tommy Stinson show or at a Westerberg show,
that would probably be way better.
Where it wasn't planned. It's fine. I mean, hey, if they can get paid, good for them. I mean, I wouldn't. It's nothing like that. I just think it's so cool to leave it behind, leave it in the dirt.
Yeah.
And not try to.
I would like to see Bash and Pop. I like that Bash and Pop record better than some Replacements records.
That's a good
little
one.
Better than probably three Replacements records.
I don't know about that. I don't know.
You find that, because we've discussed, like, I mean, Loved Ones, even the name of the band is from Elvis Costello.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you have a serious, you know, rock pop sensibility background, especially now with the Replacements. It all makes sense to me. You know what I mean? But do you feel that you've gotten lumped in as a punk artist?
Not
so much now at the solo stuff, but I remember when Loved Ones first came out, that EP.
It was something that was frustrating. I mean, it was really great to go from J Tree's a great label, and still, you know, their catalog is kind of, I mean, it just speaks for itself. It's terrific. Yeah. And going from, but going from them to Fat, it was something I was concerned about, and it was a little rough. I mean, I say that knowing that it sounds a little, I don't know. I don't want to complain. I mean, we had a huge jump, a lot more distribution, a lot more opportunities, and sold a lot more records when we went to Fat. But Fat Records doesn't really have that great of a critical rep, I suppose.
It's not a whole lot of diversity. They have their sound. They stick to it.
You and that I mean? Sound is nothing I really ever was super into. Mm-hmm. I mean, Mike and I think the sole reason we're friends is because we can get together and drink a bottle of vodka and just argue about music. You know, like, I mean, what he finds to, like, he's actually said to me, well, who are the best, the top five punk bands? And I don't know, I end up saying The Clash and The Replacements and whatever. And he's convinced it's Bad Religion, NOFX, Rancid, you know, and I'm like, what? Well, you just named your own band, who I just watched. You guys are one of the best punk bands ever. Like, are you trying to sneak NOFX into this? You can't do that. Awesome. So you know, but at any rate, his, you know, but the thing about that label is the people that work with him and who have kept that ship afloat are fantastic people. Vanessa and all the people that work there are awesome. I mean, they're totally on it, and they're very honest. Erin, Mike's wife, who has run the sort of business side for years and years, is incredible. I mean, you know you're not getting taken advantage of. You know you're getting your fair shake. You get paid like clockwork. I mean, all that stuff is so terrific. It's just that the aesthetic of the label is so that California, we wear green shorts and high socks and are into making weird jokes about joke songs. And I don't know. It was never really my thing. I was more of like an East Coast kid, you know, somewhere between Sick of It All and Fugazi was my punk upbringing, you know, and then I just went, you know, backwards to the classics. So, but they're terrific. It's just I'm getting off track, but ultimately, ultimately, yeah, it was a little bit weird because I was trying to make the band more of a songwriting based band. Mm-hmm. We just happened to play the songs really loud and really fast.
I saw the first Loved One show I saw because someone sent me the EP and I was like, working at Fuse, I was like, this, yeah, love it. What the hell? And I happened to be in DC.
Yeah.
At a friend of mine who's like, she's this amazing cellist. I went to high school and college with her, and she like played on Fugazi's The Argument and Bob Mould Records. And she's like the indie rock cellist named Amy Dominguez. And she was playing some event next door to, I can't remember the venue you guys played in, but it was, I was watching a movie. Some weird like claymation William S. Burroughs heroin type Christmas film, and then a video from Weird War, which, you know, I'll watch anything Ian Svenonius does because I think he's amazing. And then I had to get up and leave in the middle to come see you guys for playing next door. And I took my best friend from high school, who literally got me into every good band, and we just like we marched up to the front.
Yeah, I remember that.
It was amazing. I like bought all my shirts from you.
Yeah, that was cool.
It was
I remember being like somebody said, because I didn't know Fuse. You know, like you were doing Fuse at the time, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I was like, what? They were like, yeah, the guy from Fuse. I think maybe our drummer knew Fuse or something. And I was like, oh, cool. And then you were like, you know, you knew everything about music. We talked about music at the merch table, and I was like, oh, wow, cool. This guy knows every band and every record, and I don't know anything.
That's how I feel all the time when I talk to Steven.
No, that's how I feel.
Yeah, you're like the encyclopedia of indie rock.
No, the Fuse got me in a lot of trouble because they said, we're going to pitch you as Fuse's Pinfield. And I went, don't do that. I know Matt, and that's no.
Like, yeah, I just recently he was at that Replacements thing too, Matt was.
Oh, of course he was.
Yeah.
No, he's like, no, he's encyclopedia. I'm Cliff Notes.
Yeah, he is encyclopedia. I think we might have actually met when I was a teenager.
Oh, yeah?
Because I used to see Kid Dynamite all the time.
Ah, yes, yes.
And I don't know if you remember this show. I don't know if you were there, but they played in Ithaca. At John Ziga's house, who's Jeff Ziga's brother.
Right. I don't know that I was. Maybe I was there. I think
it
I was
in
every
the DVD
yeah.
and stuff.
Oh, you know what? I wasn't there. Colin went.
Okay.
Colin and I were like the two idiot roadies that, you know, we ended up in the movie, you know, you can kind of see we're just the two blockheads that move the gear around. But He went on that trip. I don't know what I was up to.
I saw them also. I remember the Euclid Tavern in Cleveland.
I was there.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. And it wasn't that with Snapcase?
Yes.
And I remember some. Wow. I remember. Oh, who was it? I think Ezek was at the show.
Yeah, because he lived around there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I remember being like, whoa, that's Ezek. You know, kind of scared. And I was like, I wonder if he'll beat anyone up. But of course, you know, I met Ezek a couple times later when I worked for Sick of It All. And he's like the nicest person you could run into.
Yeah.
But I remember being scared, like, oh, that's the guy from DMS.
Cleveland, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember Dan took me on stage after the show and was, like, showing me his amp setup because he had, like, two different amps.
Right.
Some kind of thing. And he was like, and this is how I run it.
Yeah.
What's it sort of like for you to kind of play with Paint It Black and stuff after having such a kind of history with Dan and those guys?
Well, I was in Paint It Black for the first 2 years of that band. Or maybe it was even more than that. Like, Dan put together the post-Kid Dynamite project and asked me to play guitar, and I guess it was Dan, Dave, and I, and then we found Andy, who now is like, Dan and Andy are the only two original members still in Paint It Black. It was fun. At that point, years had gone by, and you just become friends with these people, and I mean, it was fun to play together. It didn't seem like, oh, I'm in the band with that guy from Lifetime or anything.
Right.
Like, we had become good buds, and it was fun. I was starting to grow weary of playing hardcore music, though. So it's easier for me to kind of appreciate what Paint It Black does, and I really love that band not being in it. Just because I was, like, I mean, it's interesting that this came up right after you asked about being pigeonholed as a punk artist or something. But I felt like I was really immersed in that world. And when I left, I was like, well, I'm going to focus on the loved ones. And it just, everything was so punk, 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 punk. And I was like, I don't listen to punk. Like, I mean, I listened to some, but, you know, people would come up and be like, what about this new 7-inch by this band? And I'd be like, I don't even know what you're talking about. You know, I'm listening to Kathleen Edwards and you know, I don't even know who it would have been at the time. Steve Earle or something. And it was
Jonas Boner is visible.
I love Steve Earle.
Yeah, as do I. But yeah, I think Paint It Black is terrific, and they ended up making, I think, their best record. We were writing when I quit, and I ended up singing a little bit on the record, but it turned out great. I kind of wished I would have just stayed on and played on that damn thing, but that record Paradise is pretty awesome.
Good record.
And Andy's playing with Ceremony now or something?
Yeah, he is playing with Ceremony, which is great. And he kind of runs, he and Sean Agnew kind of run Philadelphia, you know, underground shows
right.
through R5. Andy's awesome. I just saw him at the Philly show the other night. Oh,
nice. What was the, because I've seen a number of Loved Ones shows. What was your path from, because I knew you like roadied and think of the Souls.
Yep.
And Explosion too, right?
Yeah.
Because, and I'm paraphrasing, you will give the correct quote because it's you, but you were on stage at a show, I think it might've been at CB's, where you're like, Matt Hawk was the one who was like, just start a band, man.
Yeah. Matt and Dave from the Explosion. In fact, yep. Dave ended up joining the Loved Ones
yep.
and he gave me sort of a late night speech driving. He was driving the van on the Warped Tour. I was tour managing, and he was driving, and it was late, and he just was like, listen, I'm firing you. You can't work for bands anymore. You have to go do this on your own. This is crazy. And Pete from the Souls ended up saying that, and Brian and all those guys. Like, basically, those two bands were like, enough is enough. You can't roadie for us anymore. Can you just do this one more tour, though? You know, like, we need you to just take this one last 5-week run. And so it's sort of, you know, those two bands are still my family. You know, those are people who I still play with. I mean, you know, members of the Explosion and the Souls will play the full band show yeah. on Sunday. And I've made records with these people and still keep in touch. I was just at Damien from the Explosion's wedding. And, you know, those two bands are, I mean, I can't say it enough. They're my best buds, and we still do stuff together and hang out as much as possible. And
oh, the Explosion is one of my favorite bands.
Yeah, me too. I'm so excited to see them in Asbury in a couple
God,
weeks.
God, so psyched.
How many shows? Are they just doing a one-off, or are they doing?
Just one.
Just one. Okay.
I love it because Matt.
Is Sam playing, or?
Sam's not playing. Chris is playing. I mean, Sam lives in Toronto now.
Okay. I mean, Chris is great. I love
yeah, he's
Chris,
awesome.
But like, I mean, no, I haven't seen him with Sam
yeah.
years ago. I saw, it was still to this day, one of the greatest shows I've ever seen. It was The Explosion, International Noise Conspiracy, and Rocket from the Crypt.
Yeah, it's a great
And I think I just wept the entire time. I think it was just like, and it was hilarious because I loved The Explosion, but I'd never seen them. And Matt, of course, came out, and I think he's just one of the funniest.
He's the best
frontman
since Mick Jagger. That's what I'll say that to anyone and defy anyone to come up with somebody better.
I concur.
He's the best.
I concur.
He's the embodiment of rock and roll.
He's
one of my best buds, and so like it's weird to even say that, but he's so fucking good at being a frontman. I mean, just throw a pill and like four beers down his throat and it's it's on. I'm ready to roll. Like I'm just like yes. And it was so bizarre when two of the Explosion guys joined the Loved Ones. I just was like, I had this crazy every night. I was like, man, no matter what I say or do as the front man, they played with the best. It took a while for them, like, and them being like, will you just stop being such a weirdo and just do what you do? Like, I was like, man, I just feel like I'm not doing it as well as Matt. And they were like, we're not thinking about that at all, ever. But, I mean, he's the best. I distinctly remember the Explosion playing a show in Philly, and there was no stage. It was just a punky show, and it was crazy. People were going bananas, and he had slip-on Vans, and they fell off. Like, he was running around with the mic and the crowd, and he's looking for his shoes while he's singing, and it hits like a breakdown mosh part or whatever, and he picks up his shoe. He's waving around, and he goes, I've got one shoe and one dick. Which one do you want up your fucking ass to the entire crowd? And I just was, and that was early on, and I just was like, yeah, I love this guy.
Oh.
I mean, he's so great. And we had actually at the bachelor party for Damien a couple weeks ago, we formed like an impromptu band, and Matt grabbed the mic, and we just, it was awesome.
He is phenomenal, I think, and to the point where, you know, my wife has been to thousands of shows. She'd never listened to the Explosion. I took her, and she's like, this laughing hysterically. Someone threw something, hit Matt in the head in the middle of a song. He just goes, somebody throw something at me. That's a no-no. And goes right back, and I was like...
He also, the last show they played in New York, he got hit with a shoe, and he goes... You don't throw a shoe at me. I'm the coolest motherfucker in here.
Is that at Knitting Factory?
Yeah.
I was at that show when they did No Revolution four times in a row.
Yeah.
Greatest encore I've ever seen. They'd be like, everyone's on stage. No one watching. Everyone's on the stage. No one down on the floor. And that's like, one more! Like, four times in a row, the entire
four
song.
Four times the song everyone loved the most.
It was amazing. It was art.
So we should have Dave, if you will. We were talking before here, so we read that story you wrote about being on tour with Chuck and having in that hotel or something.
Oh, my God, yeah.
And
that was crazy.
Could you maybe, I know the story you wrote actually was really detailed and well-written, but I was wondering if maybe you could just recount that in case maybe people who are listening haven't read
it. Can't read.
Can't find it.
Laugh
can't
out
use
loud.
Google.
URL. Yeah. That was at the end of a cross-Canadian tour. So I had all the money I'd earned for 3 weeks or whatever of being on tour. And, you know, usually I have these strategic ways of keeping that money away from situations where it can get stolen or lost or whatever. But at that particular moment, I was going from the venue back to the hotel. I had all my stuff with me because I had to fly the next day. And it was a big music conference in Toronto that I was playing with Chuck. So there were musicians in the hotel all weekend. I was used to seeing freaky people, weirdos, just hanging around the lobby. So I thought nothing of it. It was like 4 a.m. I walked in and this guy comes up and he goes, hey, man, he goes, you write songs? Because I had my acoustic guitar in a bag or whatever, you know. And I was like, yeah. He goes, you play tonight? Yep. He goes, you make any money? I was like, nah, man. I was like, making money in this game is a fool's errand, you know? And knowing that was kind of a weird question. Mm-hmm. Why are you asking me what I made tonight, you know? And so he was like kind of tweaky and like weird and a little too close to me. And I was waiting for the elevator and he goes, yo, man, you know, I make beats. I think that's what he did. He said something. You'll have to refer to the story, whatever he did. Or why he was there. Maybe he was a rapper or he was into hip hop. And I was like, oh, that's nice. You know, he's like, we should write songs. Oh, yeah, that sounds cool, man. I'm waiting for the elevator, which is taking an eternity. And he goes, well, give me your number. And I was like, well, that's not going to happen. You know, and I started to get, like, into that Philadelphia, like, you know, what's going on here? And he goes, what do you mean? You ain't going to give me your number? I was like, no. I was like, I don't give my number to anybody because I don't, you know, the phone bills up here are really expensive. I was trying to let him down easy. So he's persistent. The elevator opens and I get in and he goes, yo, man, that's fucked up. You could have just told me you didn't want anything to, you weren't interested. And I was like, I try. And you could see him getting agitated. And I was like, oh, man. So I said, I did. I tried to be nice. Fuck off. I'm not giving you my number. And then the doors closed. And I could hear him like grumbling or you know, kind of cussing at me or whatever. And I was like, wow, that was a weird scene. Thank God I'm going to bed. So I get upstairs. I'm at the door. And I'm like, oh, man, my hotel key isn't working. It got demagnetized. Like, I got to go back down there and deal with this cretin. Ugh, this sucks. Well, I turn, the elevator door is open, and here he comes, this guy with a full head of steam, like, coming at me. I'm like, fuck, you know, here we go. Knocking on the door, and I was sharing a room with Chuck Reagan. Like, hey, Chuck! No answer, and the guy comes up, and he's, like, real itchy, you know, like, maybe he was tweaking on some kind of speed or whatever. I'm like, oh, man, this is not going to go well. And he goes, oh, man, that's fucked up. I said, listen, man, I told you I don't want anything to do with you. Just I'm going to bed. Just leave me alone. Something like that. And he's coming at me and he gets to me. And I was like, and I switched into like crazy guy. Knowing sometimes that's your only way out. Because I had all my money, my guitar, all my clothes. All right. And I was like, this is going to end bad for you. I was like, trust me, back off. And I said all kinds of fucked up things to him about how I was going to do awful things to him. You know, like, you know, it's going to be like prison. And I'll just indicate it that way. And he kind of looked at me weird. And he was like,
the term skull fuck ever come out?
I don't think skull fuck, but right. Various other fucking. Because I just was like, you know, like, I'm not that big. I'm very small. But I figured I could play crazy
guy.
You
gotta play the freaky card.
You know, and I was like, what am I going to do? And he's like, it's your choice, man. You either give me your money, your guitar, or that bag of clothes. And I was like, I choose none. I was like, and seriously, if you get any closer to me, I'm going to fucking knock your teeth out. You're going to be swallowing your teeth in seconds. This is your last chance. And then at the same time, I'm banging on the door like, Chuck! Chuck! Come on, man. Like, what are you doing in there? He's probably watching like Sex in the City or whatever or fell asleep. I don't know what he's up to. So the guys, I think I balled up my fist or whatever, or dropped the guitar. I don't know. I detailed it in the story the next day. And he goes, what are you going to do? When he grabbed my wrist, like my right hand. So I was like, fuck, you know, here we go. And I blasted him quickly in the chin, like just to stun him, and then grabbed his throat. And so we're like standing there and I'm kicking the door like, Chuck, this guy by the throat. He's got my arm. I can't tell what he's on, and the guy's kind of like coming at me, and I'm like not backing down, and I'm scared. I don't know if he's got like a knife or what he's going to do or what he's capable of, but I did. Oh, I missed the best part of the story. Right before that, he goes, I had indicated in the lobby where I was from. He said, where are you from? That was the first thing he asked. I said, Philly. And he goes, oh, okay, right. So as he was coming towards me, he goes, I said, you know, I'm telling him, like, you're going to get fucked up. Back up off me. Don't come any closer. And he goes, yo, man, this ain't Philadelphia. This is Canada. And that was the moment I knew, like, you're not getting stabbed. You're probably not getting robbed. This guy clearly has no idea. And I kind of chuckled at him. I was like, are you fucking kidding me? It's like Philadelphia's got more violent crime in a month than Canada, the entire
has had.
in a decade. I was like, I live in a fucked up place. And that's when I kind of knew. I was like, all right, well, I don't think I'm going to get
hurt. You're thinking like, all right, I might actually get a chance to fuck this guy.
Yeah.
I'm getting laid tonight.
You make it like a free physical or something.
I said that too. That was the other thing I said. If this door opens, you're going to catch a beating that you will never forget. And then hoping that Chuck would get off his ass and come out and help me. So I'm like, oh, my God. You know, I'm kicking the door. Chuck. So I got the guy by the throat. He's got my arm. And the door finally opens. And Chuck Reagan's standing there. His hair's all mussed up. He has no shirt on. And he's just got a towel around his waist. And he goes, he looks around. He goes, what in God's name is going on out here? It was like, you know, your dad or something. And I was like, Chuck, this motherfucker's trying to rob me. And I got him by the, and the guy kind of like looks at me. He's being choked. He looks at me and he looks at Chuck. And I think he kind of, it registered like, oh man, I'm in way over my head. And he let go of my wrist and I pushed him and he kind of like backed up and started scrambling away. And I was like, and Chuck looked at me, he's like, what in the hell? And I was like, yeah, man, it's crazy. And he goes, let's get him. You know, that was the first thing. And I was like, no. I was like, go back in the room and get my shit in here. You know, grab my guitar. We're not going to go get him. We're in Canada. Like, we get the privilege of coming up here and having people, like, you know, what we do is does well in Canada. You know? And as soon as you do anything violent, forget it. You know, right. Like DUIs, violent crime, anything like that. You're fucked. You can't come back to Canada or you have to pay exorbitant amounts of money to get in. And so at least I was thinking on my feet because part of me wanted to, let's go get him. I wanted to see what would happen. Chuck would have whipped that towel off and probably choked him to death or who knows what would happen. But I was like, no, get inside and call the front desk. Like, I don't want to, I'm over it. I just want to go to bed. So we called the front desk and they caught him. He was actually staying at the hotel. And they called and they were like, do you want to come down and press charges? I was like, no, I just don't tell them what my name is or anything about me. Just get them out of here. I need a 10 o'clock wake up call, you know, and, you know, just make sure he's not here anymore. But yeah, that was crazy. It definitely made me rethink some of my night owl habits, you know, on tour. I was like, man, that could have gone really, really poorly. But yeah, it was a wacky story. This isn't Philadelphia, it's Canada.
That's the best.
Canada is like where all the nice people are. Philadelphia is where all the angry, violent fuckers.
It's like, you don't understand. We hate our own sports teams because we love them so much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was crazy.
What's going on with the band? Is loved ones? Do you have separate songs that are banked for loved ones records?
I have a bunch of songs that were intended to be the next loved ones record, and but I'm not sure what's happening. It sounds to me like not everybody was wanting to tour heavily on it, so I guess we're kind of coming to that crossroads where it's like, do we make another record but then not tour on it, which would seem bizarre to me,
right?
So we're sort of talking it through to see what's going on. We might I might just make another solo record and keep going with that, or you know, and just do the loved ones whenever we can do fun things, or we may make a record. I'm not really sure. The plan was to make another loved ones record next year, but something seems really bizarre to me about making a record and then not taking it all over the world and playing it for people. It seems like half-assing it to me.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of the point, you know what I mean? You want everyone to listen to it, but
yeah.
You know, people want the live experience.
Well, and we're not by any stretch a band like, you know, Radiohead or one of those bands that you can put out a record and not tour. I mean, people aren't going to even know it exists unless we kind of do the whole thing where we're in your town and then we're coming back and then we're opening for this band and then we go back and headline.
When's the last time you guys toured?
We haven't toured that much, man. It was, 2009 we did two tours. One of them was with the Souls in the spring, just locally. And then we did 6 weeks with Gaslight Anthem at the end of the year. And then in 2010, we did a really short run with AFI and then went to Australia. And this year, we played two shows. We played Asbury Park in New York City. Mm. And that was it. So, I mean, just everyone's busy doing other stuff. And so, yeah, it's kind of weird even to be saying it in a public forum because we haven't quite talked it all the way through, but I'm not sure what's happening. Okay. I mean, those guys are dear friends of mine and I want that to be the guiding principle. And So we'll see what everyone's comfortable with and then make decisions based on that.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing I've learned over years of talking to any band is bands are hard. Someone told me, I was playing a band in college, and they said, hardest thing is showing up for practice. It's like, once you get there, you're halfway home.
Yeah, Jason from Kid Dynamite and No More Black, I heard him once say, somebody said something about their band breaking up, and they're like, man, I'm bummed, our band's done. And he looked at him, kind of said, bands? Oh, bands just break your heart. And it stuck with me. I mean, it's true. Even when you're in a band with all your buddies, that can be exactly what happens, because people change and people want different things out of life, or people lose interest. I mean, it's even more wild to me as time goes on that there are bands like Social Distortion and the Bouncing Souls and Pearl Jam and just bands that have like been together for 30 years or 20 years. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just wild.
Well, Souls especially, I mean, they've 20 years plus now, and this was a great show. They played the Gold Record. Before they started doing these album shows years ago, they did the Gold Record in its entirety, and you played.
Yeah, that's right.
That was a great show.
That was fun.
All the way through, mm-hmm. like the whole thing, and it ended with, again, everybody up on stage at the Knitting Factory, and you were up on top of an amp, safe, overlooking everything with no mic, but still singing and screaming as loud as you could. I was in the crowd going, that's a bull. I hope it didn't fall.
I hope I didn't. Yeah, I was hoping the same thing. Yeah, that was fun. That was a good night.
Was it, Jonah, maybe you're at this episode when we interviewed Death Cab and we're talking to them, and I literally sat and said, look, I've been listening to you guys for a long time. You're one of my favorite bands. Can you not break up? Can you just, and the bass player, Nick, went, yeah, someone told us a while ago that the best thing you can do as a band after a while is just don't break up. Just stay together, you know, keep it going. But it's, I mean, it's hard. We were talking about that with Thursday, you know, who just decided, you know, on a hiatus.
Is that true?
Yeah, you know? And Thrice, like both. And
that's right. I did hear that. Yeah.
See, I agree with what you're saying, but I think sometimes breaking up is a good idea.
That's what I'm leading up to. Yeah. It's like, and not for that. Oh, we're going to reunite and get cash kind of tour kind of thing. But I think it's almost better to say break up and not hiatus.
Well, I'm going to throw him under the bus. My friend Jason Black from Hot Water Music was asking about the loved ones. This was probably about a year ago. I was like, I don't know, man. It's hard to get everybody together. And, you know, I've been going, you know, I'm looking to do this solo thing and I have a record coming out. I'm going to just see what happens. And he goes, oh, man, I got to tell you. Best thing you could do right now is break the band up. And I was like, why? Why would we break up? He goes, well, because then you can get the band back together and everyone will be jazzed about coming back. And I was like, boy, that seems kind of sketchy.
But those Hot Water shows, I mean, I saw them towards the end before they broke up. Mm-hmm. And the shows were definitely getting smaller. And then when they took a year, not that long, like 2 years off maybe, and we're back together, those shows were huge.
Yeah.
And I feel like they've all sort of been huge.
Look at the Get Up Kids, too. They're the same thing.
Yeah. Like, I felt like people kind of, like, you take these bands for granted, and you're like, oh, I'll see them next time they come to town, whatever. And then when they're gone and they come back, you're like, oh, I remember I have to.
Yeah, I remember being at the last face-to-face show years ago. You know?
Yeah. I think Kid Dynamite has played more reunion shows than they did tour. Yeah.
Going out of business
is just a sale. Yeah, you're not going out of business. It's just a sale.
I'm seeing Lifetime next month. It's so crazy. I remember like 10 years ago, like missing their last show at the Euclid Tavern and being like, I'm never going to see this band. And now I feel like...
Yeah, never say never.
Yeah.
But I mean, I don't know.
I'm just looking on Twitter. Replacements are getting back together.
The thing about that, though, is, I mean, that's another thing about this community, the punk rock thing, that's somewhat frustrating, is those bands do get taken for granted. I mean, Hot Water Music, no matter what kind of music you're into, is a great band. Lifetime was a great band. And if those bands don't get your support, they will disintegrate. And I mean, that's something that I've seen happen in this community for years and years. And I think it's still going on. I mean, God bless Tony and all the people who put on the fest, but essentially, Andy from Painted Black recently had it ended up being a poignant quote that we were just in a conversation, and he said, well, yeah, this is a destination-based subculture now. And it's true. Like, essentially, there's these fests. There might be 10 of them in the States every year. You know, there's Riot Fest and there's The Fest and Fun, Fun, Fun and all this stuff. And they slam all these bands onto the bill. And people come from far and wide, have this, you know, 600 Pabst Blue Ribbons over the weekend, watch all their favorite bands and go home. And that's the show that they saw that year. And it's kind of, it's rough because when you go through Toledo or Duluth or wherever it is that these kids are coming from all over the States, they might not come see the touring act because they're like, well, I'll just see him at Fest or I'll see him at this. And I think that that's kind of, that's a problem, you know, or I mean, it's a problem for touring musicians and it's hard to sustain your art that way. Mm-hmm. If you can only play one big, if Hot Water Music just plays the Fest, you know, then mm-hmm. that's it. You know, they're not really, they're a band that plays every now and again at that point. Right. It's hard to make records and tour and keep the whole thing running. And I think that that's something I've seen shift. And I don't know that it's necessarily that great of a thing.
It's interesting that it doesn't seem to be that kind of almost tour-driven music economy to me anymore.
No.
Maybe because I'm not going out and seeing bands as much as I used to on account of children.
Sure.
But, you know, I still keep aware.
Mm-hmm.
And I fall into that mindset of the Souls. Like I can skip 10 Souls shows because I know I'll see them, you know, I'll probably go home for the holidays.
Yeah.
Oh, the Explosions reuniting. Well, I'm definitely fucking going. You know, now I know what date I'm going to go.
Right.
You know, that kind of thing. So it's hard. But then I've had discussions with bands who, you know, were in bands that broke up, but they're really big in their town. Mm-hmm. So they're like, we'll do one big show a year at our town and, you know, make some money. It won't mm-hmm. be a lot of money, but it'll be a fun thing to do.
Right.
You know, and keeping it like I could see, you know, it's like Dismemberment Plan before they got back together. They were like, we would only play four Reno shows in Fairfax, Virginia. Like mm-hmm. once a year, we'll do a show and that'll be our thing. But of course, that was free, so it wasn't really a money thing. It was just getting together.
Yeah.
But it's hard. It's saying that it's very poignant that these bands need your support to stay there. And it's bands who've made a collective effort to either not go into the large machine of radio or couldn't.
Yeah.
And this was the only avenue they had.
Right. Hmm. Yeah, I think a lot of that infrastructure is a thing of the past,
mm-hmm.
Which is fine. I mean, progress is what it is. I mean, things change. But I do think that the mentality of we'll just see all that stuff at the Fest, and I don't mean the Fest. I mean whatever Fest you may find yourself going to, whether it be Fuck Yeah or Fun, Fun, Fun mm-hmm. or Riot or any of those things. Like, I can skip these 10 shows because I can spend $150 and see them all in one shot, and then I've had my fix.
Well, that was my Warped Tour mentality for years because
they were a big contributor to that idea. Well,
but their set times, I don't know how these Fests work, if it's 45 minutes or half an hour, but for me, Warped Tour is great because I could go see a band I'd never seen for a half hour, which was a great primer.
Mm-hmm.
But then bands like Bad Religion or Bouncing Souls, I usually avoided their sets at Warped Tour because mm-hmm. I don't want to see those bands that I really like for a half hour.
Right.
Because they're going to do, you know, a collection of big hits or their hits, you know, or their, you know, crowd pleasers.
Right.
And I want to hear something else. Mm-hmm. So that's a band that I'm going to go see, you know, a club and a venue because I want to see them for 2 hours.
Right.
Literally. Like, I mean, I hated seeing, you know, working Lollapalooza, you know, seeing Pearl Jam for an hour. That felt like robbery to me. Like, I want to see a lot more stuff from Pearl Jam up there.
Yeah.
Because that doesn't seem unfair to the crowd. And it seems, festivals, I agree with you, seem like you're chalking someone off your list.
Yeah.
Like, I've seen that band now. Awesome. File that way in the memory.
Yeah, and I got like the super limited vinyl, you know, like whatever they're selling, especially the Fest. Like there's so much crazy merch down there. I feel like kids go there just to buy stuff.
Yeah.
Mm.
And I mean, you know, you can get away with this. I could get swept away with this complaint. I mean, it's great to have a community at all, anyone paying attention at all, even if it's once or twice a year at a big festival. You know, again, I don't want to bite the hand that feeds. It's just in terms of it being a sustainable subculture, it doesn't seem like those things are contributing to that. I think the Warped Tour, I mean, we could go on for days about how, you know, about all the negatives of that tour.
Mm-hmm.
But there's positive things about it too, you know.
Of course, this, that they, one, the sustainability of that tour – and how that place is a proving ground for old and new bands.
Yeah.
And bless Kevin's heart, man. He will always pick the next superstar mm-hmm. of the globe.
Yeah.
You know, if you look at the track record of that band, of that tour, starting from the first tour was this, you know, up and coming No Doubt.
Yeah, and Sublime or something.
And, Eminem, or something. Yeah. You know, Katy Perry,
Kid Rock.
Fall Out Boy, Kid Rock, like all of this. He's like, yeah, these guys. And then he'll have someone on the flip side that he'll think is going to be the greatest band ever. Going to be like, you know, Emery's going to be huge this year.
Yeah.
And it never.
Well, you know what's crazy to me is they announced some of the bands for this year, like five of the bands.
I was like,
the old school band now, I think it's like Bayside. Like they're like Bayside's playing and then like four newer bands. I was like, I think Bayside is like Bad Religion to someone who got into the, you know, like, which is crazy to me.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Nothing against Bayside, but it's just crazy how
they're
I think of them as a newer band still.
Of course, I do too.
Yeah.
Now, Corey, you did the Kevin's version of
The Cooter version of Warped Tour. Yeah.
he
country
put a
throwdown.
Yeah,
two years ago. I did the first one. Yeah.
Oh, right on.
Yeah, that's fun.
So he's.
I was kind of the odd man out.
Who else was on that tour?
That was like, you know, it was a lot of Big Hat, Big Boot. I mean, that was like, you know, Jamie Johnson and Montgomery Gentry and like, you know, like pop country stuff. And then I did they had the side stages, like the little, you know, I called it like this. We were like the Zamboni in between the big acts, and then we were the little side freak tent. And it was mainly songwriters from Nashville, people that weren't really trying to be artists, but that wrote some of the songs you hear. And it was the Bluebird stage, which is the old proving ground in Nashville. It's the room where Willie and Waylon and those guys used to sit and write. So, I was proud to be on that stage, but pretty odd man out, you know. I think they were trying to start it very commercial mm-hmm. country and then work some of the crossover, like oddball, you know, Americana punk country stuff, any of that in-between stuff. They were trying to, like Austin Lucas. I don't mm-hmm. know if you know Austin Lucas.
Yeah.
He did it this year.
It's pretty much their MO, like literally cross-pollinating.
Yeah.
That's how it works.
It's a cool thing.
Well, I remember when the inception for that came in was when Shooter Jennings played the Warped Tour.
Oh, God.
And he, whoa, how rude.
I didn't know you'd play
Shooter now. I have a Marimba. No, it's like, why, if the volume's off on the phone, why would something go on? That's very odd. Oh, it's, you know, because it was the stopwatch, because I try to time these things, even though it never works. Shooter Jennings was on the Warped Tour, and he did the smartest thing ever. He noticed wasn't really drawing a crowd because he was playing the Dr. Mad Vibe stage, you know, Angelo from Fishbone stage.
Right next to the hot dog cart.
Right next to it. And so what they started doing was they would go to the parents' tent where, you know, where the parents would wait for their kids and they would flyer it. So all the parents would come and they were getting a crowd every show. Every time they had a set, they had a crowd. He's like, we found our audience.
That's amazing.
I love parents.
It was great. Yeah. It was great.
And if any one of those parents knew Shooter Jennings, they would have turned right back around and went back in a tent.
So Dave Haas and I were at the exact same event where we saw a man assault a woman. You can't really start too many conversations with that, but it was a very fascinating story. I mean, I don't know, like Screeching Weasel just kind of ended after that.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder how Ben Weasel's going to be remembered. I wonder if that's going to be like his kind of like Michael Richards moment where it's like kind of everything else he does is kind of discounted.
I wonder if the punk rock community is as forgiving as, say, the pop community with like Chris Brown, you know? It's like Chris Brown is still in the news. He still does stuff. He's still singing. And it's the weird redemption thing. If that was his horrible moment in his life where it was just – it can't be worse. You know, you beat up your girlfriend. You put her in the hospital by assault. You did apologize. You know, I mean, what else fucking can you do unless you're a psychopath?
Born again, it's called. I think that's your get-out-of-jail-free card in the United States of America.
What, find Christianity?
Yeah.
One of the safer, non-violent fucking religions?
You can do whatever you want as long as you're born again. It's all forgot.
You know what? Find Buddha. I don't know.
You know what that reminds me of? I read an article the other day. I don't really follow sports, but Scott Rapp is a writer for Esquire, and he wrote a book about LeBron James called The Whore of Akron. And, you know, he's writing about how there's all these articles now, like LeBron, like redemption, like LeBron James is kind of like redeemed himself from what happened in Cleveland. He's won a championship. And he wrote this essay and he was like, I'm not mad at LeBron James anymore. But he's like, just because someone wins a sporting event doesn't mean they're a good person now. Right. Like, he hasn't redeemed his character. Like, he won a he won some important games and didn't choke. But like, how does that equate with him, like, getting some kind of like moral aptitude or something?
No.
So he won a championship. That's his job.
Yeah, exactly.
To win a championship.
Exactly.
You play basketball for a living. You get a lot of money. You fucking win a championship.
Yeah, there's no bearing on your character, though.
I'm so excited that for the past 20 seconds, this turned into a sports podcast.
Yes.
We just
can we put that in the tags now?
Yeah.
I'm putting it in.
I hope you guys all enjoyed Dave Haas today. As always, music for the podcast by The Goops, produced by Brad Worrell. Well, you didn't produce The Goops. You were in The Goops, but you probably helped produce it because you were an audio guy, right?
Yeah, no, not really.
Were you the kind of guy that would get in someone's car and fuck with their presets and their stereo?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Hello.
Yeah.
I'll do that right now. You know, if you crank the bass and the treble, it just turns up everything. It's like volume, only with distortion and phase cancellation.
Oh, my God. Oh, God. You were exactly my best friend from high school. Get in my car. I'm like, don't touch it. I don't care. It's the way I like it. And in fact, I tuned it this way to fuck with you because I knew you were going to get in the car. Shut up.
Yeah, do you want to drive me crazy? If you have a graphic equalizer, just turn all the bands all the way
up. Brad EQ Worrell. Right on. So listen to us next week because we're going to do one of these. We're going to do them weekly forever. Forever is a really long time, people.
Quite a commitment.
Yeah, we should get something out of it at some point.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.